Hi, I'm Femi Oke. You're watching the stream. If I say Nobel to you, I don't even have to say Nobel Prize. You know exactly what I'm talking about because the prizes are so famous. This week, prizes have been given out for, let me see if I can remember them all, literature, economics, medicine, physics, chemistry, and we're just hours away before the Nobel Peace Prize ceremony that happens in Oslo, Norway. So on the stream today, we're going to be looking at the purpose, the impact, how contemporary are the Nobel Prizes, obviously with your help, and then we'll move on to go live to Oslo City Hall in Norway, all in one show. I'm looking forward to doing this with you, but we start with Göran K. Hansen.
Our job in the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences is to award the Nobel Prize to those who have made the most important scientific discoveries for the benefit of humankind. Now, major discoveries are, by and large, made in places where you have good scientists, where they have the freedom to do the research they want to do and the funding to do it. And unfortunately, you don't find this combination of circumstances everywhere in the world. Now, the way to get a better geographic representation or distribution of the Nobel Prize is for governments to invest in science and education and to give scientists and everybody the freedom that they need and deserve.
That was Göran K. Hansen talking about some of the challenges when it comes to awarding Nobel Prizes around the world and who gets them and who misses out. What questions do you have about the process or the Nobel Prizes? Do you have nominations that you would like to make? Comment section on YouTube is right here. Be part of today's programme. Let's meet two of our first set of guests. Hello, Henrik. Hello, Devang. Nice to see you. Henrik, please say hi and introduce yourself to our global audience around the world. Tell them your connection to the Nobel Prizes.
Hi, Femi. Thanks for having me. I'm the director of the Peace Research Institute Oslo, PRIO for short. We're based in Oslo, Norway, and we're an academic institution working creating knowledge, creating research about the causes and the consequences of armed conflict. And we have no formal connection with the Nobel Institute, where the prize is awarded, or the committee, which is a five-member committee, but we are every year launching a list of candidates that we think are good candidates based on the knowledge that we know about what the causes and the consequences of armed conflict are. But
thanks, Eric. You're basically an influencer. All right. So, Devang, nice to see you. Please say hello to our stream audience. Tell them who you are, what you do, and your connection to the Nobel Prizes.
Hi, yeah, so I'm Devang Mehta. I'm a postdoctoral research fellow in plant systems biology at the University of Alberta in Canada. And my connection to Nobel is that a few years ago, I wrote an article that appeared on Slate about the Nobel Prizes in science and why I think they are they represent both sexism as well as racism and biases in science, and why they I don't think they represent the vision of science that's that's positive and good today.
Let's start with the purpose of the Nobel Prizes, Henrik. Can you help us understand why, over 100 years after the first prize was given out, we're still leaning in to these prizes? We still laud the laureates?
That's a great question. The first prize in the first Peace Prize was given out in 1905. That's 5 years after Alfred Nobel died in 1896. And of course, it helps to be old when it comes to building a reputation, and the prize has been around now for 120 years. But at least for the Peace Prize, I think it it helps. The Peace Prize is not only the most important and most well-known prize for peace, but it's the most well-known and highest regarded prize in any domain. So it's getting a lot of attention every year. I think the explanation is manifold. I think the giving a prize for major achievements within human rights, within peace, either bringing old enemies together or awarding organizations, individuals who've been working for human rights, for the causes of peace for a long time, is something that is being appreciated broadly. I also think think that the committee in Norway has been good at trying to modernize the prize in the sense of trying to look for new domains thematically, but also to make sure that they're seeing contributions all around the world. And I think geographically, the prize is much more evenly spread out, and especially in more recent decades, than some of the other Nobel Prizes.
Devang, I see you nodding. It sounded like you wanted to burn the whole Peace Prize down. Articulate your nod, Devang. Go ahead.
Right. So I'm not an expert on the Peace Prize, but I would say that, you know, I think the Peace Prize is definitely one of the more geographically representative prizes, as Hendrik pointed out. You know, the science prizes are almost the opposite, where you have very limited geographical representation. The prizes usually go to scientists working in richer countries in the West. You know, usually European and American scientists win these prizes. So I think there's a definite difference in those two prizes.
Let me just bring in Katie Wilkinson here. And Katie Wilkinson has a connection to one of the Nobel laureates for this year. But she also points out an issue. Henrik, have a listen and then respond. And then I know, Devang, you're going to have a few things to say as well. Here's Katie.
This year, the Nobel Prize announcements were extra exciting for me personally because my lab at San Jose State has collaborated with one of the winners, Dr. Ardem Padaputian. The Nobel Prize can only be given to 2 to 3 scientists at most. However, that's not really how science is done these days. It's not the work of lone geniuses. Instead, it's the work of teams of scientists around the world working together. I thought Ardem's Nobel lecture did a great job of highlighting not only the work of the trainees in his lab, but also the work of his collaborators from around the world.
So, Henry, what do we need to know about Alfred Nobel's will that constricts what the Nobel Prize can develop into?
So the Nobel's will actually instituted 5 prizes, not 6. The prize in economics is not part of Alfred Nobel's will. So it's medicine, physics, chemistry, literature, and peace. And Alfred Nobel was even more conservative, if you like, when it comes to who should get the prize. It was actually to one person within each field. That's what it says explicitly in the will. And then the Nobel committees, both in Sweden and Norway, and Norway's the prize that is given out in Norway is the Peace Prize. They've interpreted this a little bit more broadly, so that it's right now that up to 3 individuals can share a prize, or individuals combined with organizations. So this is defined in the will, but I think this is a valid criticism, especially for the science prizes, where we see that, you know, scientific achievements today are usually not the result of individuals but of larger groups. That can, of course, be said also for the Peace Prize, and that's also sometimes why the prize is given to larger organizations for sort of major and long-term contributions.
Devang, has anybody of color won a science prize?
There have been quite a few scientists from, you know, Asia who've won the prize, but no black scientist, no scientist from the African continent has won the prize, which is a really stark omission by the committee. Another factor is, of course, that very few women scientists have been recognized with Nobel Prizes, even though they've made major discoveries. And then, as Henrik was saying, you know, the limitation on 3 people is more strictly, you know, adhere to in the case of the science prizes, because they don't usually go to organizations. Even the science prize, for example, the prize for the physics discovery of gravitational waves in 2017, which was made by an international collaboration called LIGO, actually just went to 3 American scientists.
I have to share this with you, Henrik. I'm sure you've seen it. I'm sure you know about this, because you are a Nobel Prize influencer, particularly for the Peace Prize. So have a look here. This is Dr. Nisrin Alwan. How sad is this graph? Green men, purple women. This goes through the entire history here of the Nobel Prizes right up until 2020. I don't even need to do an explainer for here. This is pathetic. Henrik, how are you able to change this? You're an influencer. What you say, what you suggest, those names you put out there, could you just say, OK, for the next 10 years, I'm only going to suggest women? That might help, right?
So technically, I'm one of those who are allowed to nominate. You either have to be a member of parliament, you have to be a member of government, you have to be a university professor. I'm a director of a peace research institute, so technically I can nominate, but I refrain from doing so precisely because I'm an influencer and trying to speak about the prize without having too many ties. But I think seeing that statistics, it's really startling, and it's demonstrating first and foremost that this prize has been around, or these prizes have been around for a long time, and this gender gap was just more horrendous in the past than it is now. If you look at the Peace Prize for the past three decades, it's still a gender gap. For the 35 individuals who've received the Peace Prize, 24 are men and 11 are women. But if you look at the past decade from 2011, 6 are women, 5 are men. So it's starting to look better. I think we, I wouldn't advocate that no men could get the Peace Prize, but from now on and for next decades. But I do think that this is something that the committee is seriously considering. And also the geographical distribution, if you look at the 35 individuals over the past three decades, only 9 of them are European or North American, 15 are from the Asian continent, 9 are African, 2 are Latin American. So this is starting to look much better in terms of both the geographical and gender distribution for the Peace Prize.
All right. Devang, I just want one last thing to ask you. If you had received a Nobel Prize, would you feel differently about it?
Well, I hope that if I get that call from Sweden, at midnight, I would be able to say that, I don't accept the prize because it doesn't stand for the original science that I stand for.
You hope.
And I wish more scientists would do that as well.
Yeah. Henrik, it's so good to have had you in this discussion. And thank you, Devang, as well, for pointing out the purpose, the impact of the Nobel Prize, and also perhaps some of the challenges as well. We go next to Oslo City Hall in Norway to meet two of my colleagues who are preparing for the Nobel Peace Prize ceremony and a very distinct interview that they will be doing. Hello, James. Hello, Folly. So nice to see you. Welcome. I'm going to put something to you, first of all, because I want you to join in.
Hi.
This.
Hey
hello.
There, Femi. How are you?
Hi. Very well, thank you. I'm going to put something to you, and I want you to listen to this comment here. And it comes from the Oslo New University College and picks up on some of the challenges that the Nobel Peace Prize has in terms of the nominations, who receives it. Have a listen, have a look.
The Nobel Peace Prize given to Abiy Ahmed has become a huge embarrassment for the Nobel Committee. Never before has one of their laureates actively started a war and even commanded the war from the front line, as we have seen Abiy Ahmed has been doing over the last few weeks. The Nobel Committee cannot revoke a prize once it has been offered. But the committee could have done more to cast light on atrocity warfare in Ethiopia, commanded by one of their laureates.
I see Fully and James both making notes about this. I am wondering, because of so many interviews you have done with Nobel Peace Prize laureates, what the take is from the Nobel Committee. Are they embracing the controversy because that keeps the prize relevant? Or are they embarrassed sometimes when some of these very famous Nobel laureates, they fall short of the aspirational Nobel Peace Prize that they were given?
I think this was the most embarrassing one so far.
That and Aung San Suu Kyi.
Yes. Yeah. But we're talking about Abiy Ahmed, the Prime Minister of Ethiopia. And it's interesting to note that Al Jazeera comes here most years. We've got a partnership with the Nobel Committee to come and do an interview with the laureate. Mm. We didn't do one with Abiy Ahmed.
No,
he wouldn't do it.
He wouldn't do an interview. He was here for the ceremony. Yep. He gave his lecture to the Nobel audience here, but wouldn't speak to the press at the time. declined the interview, which was quite interesting because it was the first time, actually, that a laureate had been in Oslo, in a long time anyway, and declined to speak to the press. It wasn't just Al Jazeera. He just simply didn't talk to any media that was here in Oslo. So that was quite interesting. Controversial, of course, Abiy Ahmed, but also Myanmar's Aung San Suu Kyi, you recall, praised at the time when she was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize because she'd been in detention, of course. But then later on, when she came to power and was silenced on the plight of the Rohingya in Myanmar, there was a lot of criticism. Also, Barack Obama in 2009.
Because he hadn't actually done anything.
No.
He literally, just as he'd become president, he got the Nobel Peace Prize for not being George W. Bush, basically. So, yeah, I mean, and I think some of the times it's when the Nobel Committee takes a bit of a punt, because I think you've got Nobel Prizes where they are recognising a particular thing, journalism this time, the problems facing journalism. We had nuclear weapons when ICANN got the prize.
They're non-controversial
ones, they're trying
ones,
to encourage those.
Exactly.
And I think that's what they were trying to do with Abiy Ahmed. They were trying to encourage that deal with Eritrea to make it a wider peace deal with Ethiopia, and it's fallen flat. The peacemaker is now the warmonger.
Indeed, and I think they might be embarrassed by this, really.
Well, the thing is, it's very secretive. They don't really tell us much.
They don't tell us much about how they choose these laureates, and afterwards, when the controversies arise, they don't really react to them, do they? And so I guess it feeds into the whole Nobel and the secrecy behind it and the prestige of the Nobel. The controversies exist, but does it take away the prestige of the prize? I'm not sure.
It's very odd. Yeah. I mean, it is a very, very odd thing that Nobel did in his will. The other prizes are all in Sweden. The Peace Prize is separate. For some reason, he didn't trust the Swedes with the Peace Prize, even though he was Swedish. Mm-hmm. And he was a man who manufactured dynamite. That's how he made his money.
Yeah.
But he wanted to create a Peace Prize, even though he's a man who'd made weapons of war. And he decided this one should be in Norway when the other prizes were all in Sweden.
Yeah.
So Folly and James, let's talk about these two Peace Prize laureates that you are going to be talking to in a few hours' time. Maria Ressa and Dmitry Muratov. I'm going to start with a moment in October. I love these moments. I love it when the laureates find out that they've won the Nobel Prize because they kind of lose it. So this is Maria Ressa in October finding out when she was on a virtual panel that she had won. Let's take a look. And then Folly and James, you pick up immediately and tell us more about why Maria Ressa is different, unusual, special, and about these two particular laureates. Let's take a look at Maria.
This is for all of us. Oh, my God. I am in shock. But I actually, I think it's a recognition of how tough it is. See, I don't cry. This is, okay, wait, 2 seconds. So this is a recognition of how hard it is to be a journalist today, how hard it is to keep doing what we do, right? So thank you to the Nobel Prize Committee. I share it with a Russian journalist, and it's a recognition of the difficulties, but also hopefully of how we are going to win the battle for truth, the battle for facts. We hold the line.
That was
amazing.
Yeah.
But you know,
a recognition of how hard it is to speak when you're overcome by emotion.
Exactly. And you know what? I kind of wasn't surprised by Maria Ressa's win. I mean, she was named Time Person of the Year a couple of years ago. She's been out there promoting freedom of speech, freedom of expression in the Philippines. She's known worldwide. I knew somehow this year that the Nobel would go to journalism, a journalistic entity like RSF, Reporters Without Borders, or a journalist, because of the state in which press freedom is around the world today.
But one of the other possible candidates was Russia's Alexei Navalny.
Yes.
Because he got poisoned and then he got thrown in prison.
Right.
And he is the most notable opponent to Vladimir Putin that we've seen for a long time. And that may have explained why a Russian journalist, a very, very distinguished Russian journalist, was also chosen.
Awarded the prize.
For the prize.
But Maria Ressa is someone just truly exceptional, I think, for journalists. She's come a long way. I mean, she started off working at CNN, of course, as CNN's bureau chief in Manila, and then went on to create her news website, Rappler. And she's been a thorn on the side of Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte for a long time. I mean, she's had so many cases against her. There's even a libel case against her that was just filed as she was flying here to Oslo just a few days ago. Even getting to Oslo was so difficult for her. For the last few days, she didn't know whether she was going to make it. I actually was on the same flight with her, and she had been to New York, but she had to fly back to the Philippines to get a new authorization to fly to Oslo to pick up her Peace Prize. In the end, the courts granted her the permission, but for the longest time, she wasn't sure that she was going to make it because she's been under so much pressure.
And let's just be clear, this is permission for bail.
Yes.
That she's not off. She's not dropped charges or anything. This is a Nobel laureate who could, well, not for any good reasons, not any just reasons, could end up still in prison, I think.
Indeed.
Dimitri also, terribly brave man, running his newspaper, set up at the time of the Cold War, the end of the Cold War, the collapse of the Soviet Union. He has lost six colleagues killed, murdered, and they've never brought any of the people.
James,
they've brought a few henchmen to...
Right, exactly.
But not the real masterminds.
One of them was, of course, Napoli Toskaya.
I'm just going to bring in Dmitry Muratov in at this moment, because you talked about how many colleagues he lost. Moments after he found out that he had won the Nobel Peace Prize, he held a press conference, and the first thing on his lips was... Well, have a listen, because it's remarkable. And then I'm going to hand back to you two at the Oslo City Hall to tell us more about Dmitry. Here he is.
Это премия Ани Политковск, Юры Щекочихина, Игоря Домникова, Насти Бабуровой, Стаса Маркелова, Наташи Стемировой. Тех наших павших профессионалов, которые отдали за профессию свою жизнь. Я ненадлежащий бенефициар этой премии.
Well, you heard Dmitry there dedicating the award to his six colleagues from Novaya Gazeta who were killed, including Anna Politkovskaya. He is not as a public of a figure as Maria Ressa. He's kind of been behind the scenes, but he's run this newspaper, Novaya Gazeta, since 1993.
Basically,
It's a collective.
He's the editor.
And at one point, after Anna Politkovskaya died, he actually quit as editor, wanted to go away because I guess it was too much pressure on him. But they forced him, his colleagues forced him to come back and take the reins of the paper again. So he's a really brave man, extremely brave. And, you know, when you look at it today, Novaya Gazeta is one of the last independent newspapers in Russia which isn't labeled a foreign agent, right?
There's something interesting going on in Russian media.
Right.
Because Putin, who's been in power for 22 years now, managed to work things. One of the big TV stations was called NTV, and one of the first things he did was make sure that was taken over by a government company, Gazprom.
Right.
And slowly, television was controlled by the government. Mm-hmm. The government's message dominated everything. But the new thing, of course, is the internet and social media, and that is magnifying the work of journalists.
Right.
And that, I think, is how Navalny, for example, is getting his message across and getting the Russian government so worried that there was an attempt to poison him, and now he's in a prison
camp. And social media, in a way, I mean, when you look at Putin's ratings now, they've gone down compared to a few years ago because of social media, because of the influence of social media in Russia, especially among young people. So on the one hand, he uses it sometimes, you know, to disseminate Russia's propaganda in Russia and abroad, actually. He's used social media in elections to interfere in elections in the US, in the Brexit vote in the UK as well. But it's somewhat backfired at home, right? Right.
And there's another aspect to this, which is people have said to me, and believe this or don't believe it, that in the past when Putin's had demonstrations, when he's had trouble at home, he starts to look further afield. Mm-hmm. He starts to look for something different, something to change the subject. Well, we have 120,000 troops massing on the border of Ukraine right now. Now, he may have reasons there to invade, but it might be relevant.
So all these questions we're going to put to our two Nobel laureates tomorrow when we interview them here for the Nobel interview, an Al Jazeera special, live from Oslo. And Femi, I want to invite your viewers, your audience to, you know, join us in the conversation.
James and Folly,
thank
you. You
can tweet us. We're on Facebook as well, streaming live on Facebook and YouTube.
Hashtag AJ Nobel.
Oh, my goodness, there's no... stopping them once they get started. All right, on YouTube, this is Liz Rainey. Maria Ressa seems like a great choice. Her work in the Philippines has been amazing. Thank you for those YouTube comments. And just in case you missed what Folly and James were saying about that special news programme on Al Jazeera English a little bit later, here's the trailer.
For the first time since the lead-up to the Second World War, the Nobel Peace Prize is being awarded to journalists.
Maria Ressa and Dmitry Muratov are receiving the 2021 prize for their courageous contribution to freedom of expression in the Philippines and in Russia.
In an exclusive interview live here in Oslo, we'll be speaking to this year's laureates about the challenges and dangers they face doing their job and its significance in protecting democracy.
The Nobel interview, only on Al Jazeera.